You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey everybody, what's going on? It's Josh Wigler with another episode of Worst Day Ever, recapping Season 1, Episode 2 of 24. Just an obligatory reminder that despite what you might hear in this podcast, which was recorded just about a year ago, this podcast comes out once a week. It does not come out 700 times a week or whatever crazy thing that I say in this podcast. This podcast comes out but once a week. 24 minutes coming your way once a week on Mondays. This is the Episode 2 recap. Next week we'll have the Episode 3 recap, which we also recorded a year ago. And then episode 4, from that point forward, we're coming to you live from 2021. Don't forget that we have a feedback show coming your way on episode 4 of 24 season 1. Do you have questions about our takes about season 1 of 24 so far? Send them my way, josh@postshowrecaps.com. That's josh@postshowrecaps.com. Send that feedback in. We'd love to hear from you as we stop down for a longer episode during week 4 of Worst Day Ever. For now, it's that rapid fire 24 minute podcast beginning right now. The following podcast was recorded on May 25th, 2020, from 10:48 in the morning until 11:12 in the morning. Events occur in real time. 24. Well, I don't know how your day is going, but over here it's the worst day ever on Post Show Recaps, the 24 podcast, where we're going through every single episode of season 1 in 24 minutes or less. I'm Josh Wigler. I've seen every episode of 24. I'm joined here by Emily Fox, who just got absolutely rattled by the fact that Alan York and Terry Bauer are taking the time out of their busy day to clean the furniture store that has been ravaged by the children's antics.
It just feels like a bad priority. It feels like a bad priority. Your daughter is missing.
Your daughter is missing.
And you're like, let's just clean up this store real quick.
It's their parental instincts. They're like, oh, we're going to get sued. Like, we got to just like do the best that we can to be good people.
Your husband's a federal agent.
All right.
Can get you out of it.
This is hour 2 of season 1 of 24. The hours of 1 a.m. to 2 a.m. We are going to breeze through the events of the episode, stopping down with our observations. And if we have time left over, which we won't, we will get through any other stray observations that we have. Emily Fox, so far the 24 train is still a pleasing ride for you.
Yeah, I would say so.
How was your experience with episode 2 versus episode 1?
A lot more of that heightened drama, a lot of high stakes, so many things happening.
Lots of death.
My adrenaline just pumping.
Your adrenaline's pumping. Emily's adrenaline is pumping. I hope yours is pumping as well as this daily, not every day. It's a 24-4 podcast. 4 days a week, 5 days a week for this first week of the podcast.
All right, let's go.
So let's do it. Let's get into it. So we begin at 1:02 in the morning and 17 seconds, because there's like a previously on that they got to get through. They account for that. They start the Mojave Desert as Mandy lands from the plane.
She landies.
Mandy landies, and there's a lot of scrambling back at CTU about this plane that just exploded. And like, was it an accident? Was this intentional?
Well, it was very upsetting.
It was very upset.
No one's thrilled about that.
No one's thrilled about it, but Jack Bauer's senses are tinkling. I think you're already starting to see this is a man with the sharp instincts, where he says, that flight came from Berlin. Richard Walsh said that the shooter probably came from overseas, so this might be a thing.
Well, the reality is we don't have time for him to be doing the mental math it would take for him to figure
it's just
all
like,
this
just
out.
Just start looking into it as if it might be. Like,
I have a TV show to make. I got to show you one solid hour of that entertainment, I don't have time to talk about looking it up.
What other leads do we got? Tony, get to work. And Tony's like, I don't really want to do that. And by the way, why was George Mason limping out of your office? Some shenanigans, chicanery is happening here, and I want to know what's going on.
I feel like Tony Almeida's not particularly
self-confident. You be very careful with what you say next. Okay, self-confident I'll take.
Yeah, because he's like, I really want to know what happened.
Emily,
I'm not going to let this go.
Emily, I know we've got a lot of business to take care of, but I do need to, this is important for me. How are you feeling about Tony Almeida so far? Just be honest.
He's being kind of a weenus.
You think he's being kind of a weenus, right?
Yeah.
This is tough.
Like, you can't just take, like, no for an answer, or at least go up to Nina afterwards and be like, Nina, I think there's something up. Yeah. Like, instead, I think something's happening, and I'm very upset about it.
Yeah.
Like, stop being a weenus about it.
Yeah, this is going to be tough that you think Tony
Almeida
is a weenus.
Aren't you an agent? Can't you do some agentry yourself?
Tony Almeida.
Well, real research?
Isn't he, like, doesn't he stalk her?
I know, but he does it in such, like, an annoying way. Can't he just be like, cool, I'm going to dig into this deeper on my own?
You know, short of Jack Bauer.
I'm sure he is.
Short of Jack Bauer, Tony Almeida is my favorite 24 character. So this is going to be very difficult that Emily thinks that Tony Almeida is a weenus, but that is a journey that we need to track. But Nina, like, is basically like, Tony, stop being a weenus. George Mason.
Exactly.
George Mason showed up. He threatened Jack because the people that he busted, you know, last year were friends of George's. And, you know, Jack doesn't have a lot of tolerance for critiques. And Tony's like, okay, fine, sure. And he walks away. So I guess, like, even in that version of the cover-up story, so Jack punched him directly in the kneecap. Like, even in that version of the story, the reason George Mason limped out of the office is because Jack hit a superior officer. And Tony's like, oh, that's good enough for me. meanwhile, back with Mandy, she's naked by the fire.
Totally a normal thing anyone would do.
Mandy's not a normal person, as I think,
one of the two times she's completely shirtless in this show.
She's an assassin.
I've decided that is the least probable thing about this episode.
I believe the internet called her something like killer
shirtless bandit.
No, I think that they called her like killer naked Mandy was like how she was known in the fandom, if I'm remembering.
Thank
right.
God her hair is long enough. Her boobs.
It's just long enough for the censors. She's like naked by a fire that she's had the time to start in the last like 4 minutes
Can
of
we
like
talk about
blowing
that?
Up a plane and landing.
I got really upset about how the fire was left unattended, especially in a desert or dry climate in California.
Well, maybe so she hides this ID that she pilfered from Martin Belkin, the photographer who's dead, who she boinked and stole the ID from because he's the photographer at the upcoming Palmer brunch, the historic occasion. And when she leaves, she gets taken back to like go and hang out with some other secret terrorist who we'll talk about in a little bit.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, a biker shows up, a bicyclist.
He's not a bicyclist.
I'm an idiot. Maybe that biker put out the fire. Maybe that biker was a safety.
Nah, he was just using his little metal detector.
No, it was she. It's the woman that you see at the end of the episode.
Oh, she. Sorry.
So
didn't put that together. Now I get it.
Back at CTU, Tony Almeida, the weenus, according to Emily Fox, goes up to Nina and goes, you know, I was really impressed by that story you told about Jack. It reminded me of that time when you and I came in really early in the morning and everyone was giving us crap. And you're like, yeah, we had a breakfast we had to go to. I was really struck by how you were such a convincing liar. And Nina's like, I don't know what you want me to say.
What would you think Tony Almeida's astrological sign is?
I don't know. Are you trying to suggest he's a Pisces like me?
He has a lot of feelings.
Wow, Emily, I'm getting dragged here.
Maybe that's why you like him.
Getting dragged. Meanwhile, Alan, York, and Terry are dragging themselves to Palladio Furniture in the Valley, where they've got evidence that Janet and Kim were here, but they're not here anymore. And Alan finds something scandalous in the bedroom where Janet and Dan were boinking, where Danit was happening. Danit, Chloe! That'll make sense later. And he shows up with a wrapper, and Emily goes, oh, a wet wipe! It's a condom.
I know, but it was like an off-brand one.
It was an off-brand condom.
Can we just talk about why are they at Palladio for so long?
Because it's a real time show, Emily. Events occur in real time, so they're there for the better part of an hour without any other leads, hoping their kids show back up.
They wouldn't come back to this.
They don't know that. They have nowhere else to go. And especially if they were trying to find Janet and Kim, they'd have to be on the road because they're
Janet!
They're just like driving.
Janet!
They're driving all over the place. Dan has apparently given Janet a roofie.
Yeah, and goes, told you.
You should have done the same thing. Yeah. You should have done the same thing,
which is
Rick.
Like, one of the most ridiculously horrible things to A,
horrible.
Say.
Yeah.
B, have said in the context of what's going on. Right. I don't know. This is ugh.
We've got a lot more to talk about with Dan and Rick as we go through. It's 1:09:47 in the morning when Richard Walsh meets up with like Scott Baylor. He just shows up and he goes and he hangs out with Scott, who's like, "I'm freaking out, man. There's a plot against the presidential candidate."
I thought Scott was like, "I'm gonna go take a nap. I'll see you tomorrow."
That's basically.
And then he was like, "No, I'm quitting."
He's like, "I'm quitting my
job."
But
I was really relieved that someone values sleep in this show.
Yeah, you were like, "Oh, he seems actually tired. That's good."
Yeah.
But Scott has uncovered the depths of this plan, and he's got a key card. And the key card, like Walsh, is like, "What does a key card got to do with anything?" Well, let me break down the science of how it works. There's a magnetic stripe on the key card, and that usually just lets you in.
Richard's like, "This is ridiculous. Like, I have people open my hotel rooms for me.
Speed it up. We gotta go." Anyway, the key card contains information that somebody who might be in on the plot
compromised.
Yeah. And so Scott's like, "I put my wife and kid on a plane. This is all very bad. I don't want anything to do with this." And then
Scott goes to sleep forever.
And then Walsh is like, "Hey, I really need your help. Please, just for 24 hours. Scott's like, "Fine. 24 hours, you got me for that." And then, yeah, he just gets assassinated. Emily Fox bellowed out loud, "Your contract has not been renewed," to the poor guy who plays Scott. Walsh takes a hit to the arm, and he calls Jack Bauer. He says, "I'm at 2350 Dunlop Plaza. Jack, get me out of here." And it's a split screen. I think that this was, like, the first instance, Emily, where you, like, really took note of the split screen.
Right.
This is the format of 24.
Some of the ways in which the split screen is used is a little silly to me, because it's the same shot of the same person. It's like Jack twice.
Well, it's not the same shot. It's
it is.
Couple shots of Jack.
No, it's not like we're watching him drive forward and then we're looking at him head on. It's usually both head
just
on.
Double Jack?
Yeah.
I'll have to look for that.
And like one screen's larger than the other, but it's not showing us anything. We can't see the other screen.
All right. Well, we'll keep tracking split screen and seeing if it's...
And then there was a tri-screen later and two of them were Jack.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Head on.
That happens on the show. All right. 1:17 in the morning and 48 seconds and the beeping is coming back. And this is when Emily notes, that's a very confident beeping.
Yeah, it's different from the...
It's different
episode.
From the pilot. The pilot has a very like tepid beeping when it's doing the clock. It's like, you guys gonna like this 24 show? Do you guys mind if we beep?
Someone called up Colin in special effects and was like, "Gotta jack that up."
And Colin's like, "You got it, boss." And he just like turned up the volume. And now the clock beeping is going to be what it is for the rest of the show. Jack is on the road trying to find his buddy Walsh. And meanwhile, he's on the phone with Terry. He's like, "I'm so sorry I can't be with you, Terry. There's some very bad things going on over here." And Terry's like, "Oh, yeah? Well, I found condoms."
Well, I'm here hanging out with Janet's dad.
With freaking Alan. I'm stuck with Alan.
Alan's not a bad-looking dad.
No, he's a kind of a daddy, huh?
Yeah.
He's looking good.
Yeah.
Rick and Dan are with...
I know it seems like we're really bad guys.
Yeah, so Rick
but
and...
we're cool.
Rick and
what
Dan...
What a ridiculous
So Rick and
life.
Dan are in their purple mystery van, and they're driving around, and Janet's all roofied up, so she can't, like, say anything in the front, and Rick is trying to assure Kim. He literally says, "I know it seems like we're very bad guys, but we're not. We're cool." And Emily was not thrilled with that line
at all. I wrote in caps, "Driving under the influence is never cool."
Never cool.
Also, who writes these lines for teenagers?
Yeah.
Did nobody know a teenager who was on the writing staff here?
Emily Fox, be prepared for the fact that this is 24. 24 does not know how to write children. And it is a hallmark of the show. And it's exceptional for podcasting.
Yeah, and like the next scene we see is David Palmer and his wife talking in the hotel room, and then her being like, "Are the kids home yet? Like, where are the kids?
Where are all the children? No one.
Why are they all out so late?"
Well, in the fairness of the Palmer kids, it seems like they are young adults. It seems like they're like early 20s. So like they're allowed to be.
I was not okay. Like my mom didn't let me even go out. As
Fox, once again, I'm so sorry, but that sounds like a personal problem that you have to deal with off the podcast.
I'm baffled. I'm baffled by the parenting in this
Speaking of which, I feel like I'd be remiss. I should have brought it up on the most recent podcast, but the cliffhanger from our preview show. So you saw Kiefer Sutherland at a Duane Reade in New York?
I did. I had.
Is this a good story, or is it just like you literally just like saw him?
I saw him, but I was with two friends who were visiting from out of town, two of my best friends from home. And I walked down to get like waters or something because we'd been walking around, and I saw him in the like Band-Aid aisle or whatever. And so I ran to them, whispered to them, and said, "Hey,
it's Kiefer.
Yeah, go to like aisle 8." and then meet me at the front and we'll pay for these waters. Yeah. And they were both so excited to see a celebrity.
Yeah, I have a friend who has a very, very vivid Kiefer Sutherland story that is absolutely not fit for a podcast.
So, oh, I think I know this story.
That is for the $200,000 patrons.
Yes.
That's $200,000 a month. Otherwise, I'm not telling you that story. Mm. All right, at 1:20 in the morning in 25 seconds is when we find out that the kids, they stopped for pizza after this big speech that they gave.
But at least David Palmer's wife's like, I think I'm going to turn in.
Well, she's like, I'm going to go to sleep. By the way, like, you know, what was going on before with the car? I was like, don't worry. I don't want anything to ruin. Today is going to be like the most important day of my life, or second most important day. And she's like, what was the first? He goes, oh, well, that's pretty obvious. I'm like, the romantic music starts playing. He's like, it's when I hit the game-winning three against DePaul in the Final Four. What a flex. For David Palmer to be revealed as like a star college basketball player.
Well, he's great.
He's great. I believe Georgetown.
I feel like I would vote for him.
I would absolutely.
From like what I can tell, even with like the salacious thing that he's trying to hide.
He's a good man. And we've got 10 minutes left.
Go!
At 1:22 in the morning, there's Gaines. This is one of the new bad guys that we're going to be watching, played by Michael Massey, RIP, passed away of stomach cancer a few years ago. Great actor, played a memorable character in The Crow. He was one of the bad guys in The Crow. Fun guy. Or is it fun boy? I don't remember. We don't have time. And he's offering Mandy a job over the summer. She's like, no, I'm not going to be here this summer. I'm going to take the money.
Do you want a summer job?
Do you want a summer job, Mandy? And Gaines secretly runs a camp for all the kids. Jack has Nina give him the code for the North Garage at 2350 Dunlop Plaza.
And
which
someone's tracing these calls, we've learned.
Yeah, Tony is listening in. 91367 star is the code to the North Garage at 2350 Dunlop Plaza in Los Angeles, unless 24 has since, in the 20-ish years since then, changed the code to life sucks, one word. Jack goes in, he meets Walsh, and Walsh is like, oh my God, I'm under attack. And Jack's like, there's a shooter here. And Walsh goes, at least maybe three.
Yeah, I was like, this sounds so scripted.
It's very important. Mandy.
Have you realized how dangerous parking garages are?
Devastating.
Yeah.
And Emily, it's going to get worse. Parking garages, we will see more of them on season one.
Why does anyone ever spend any time there?
It's a bad idea.
I think parking garages might be the most dangerous place on earth.
It's a very bad idea. Mandy, where she's at with Gaines and everybody, she's like at the assassin compound. And she meets this guy who walks in and he's got Martin Belkin's face.
And she's also shirtless.
Just
standing in front of the medicine cabinet as one does.
She's just very free. What do you want? She's very free.
It's just the most random thing ever that's absolutely improbable.
But she's really hyped on the fact that this guy's got like the same
Belkin
exact
face.
You got that Belkin face.
The Belkin visage.
You got that Martin Belkin face. So I'm pretty sure it's the same exact actor who is playing like this new guy who
you
has.
You didn't do your research and look this up before we came on here?
No, I did my research like 15 years ago, and so I'm trusting my memory from 15 years ago. I'm pretty sure that's the same guy. At CTU, Nina and Tony are going to get into a little fight. Where Nina's like, there's a chain of command. And here at CTU, I'm your superior, and you gotta listen to me. And Tony goes, all right, that's fine. Boss me around here, outside, or something else, right? Ugh. You don't like Tony Almeida. Oh, I hope that changes. Might not change this season. So Jack and Walsh, they're trying to get out of there, and Walsh's like, oh God, I'm so sorry I caused you to do this. And Jack like basically grabs him by the face and goes, never say that. I owe you my life. So there's like some very deep history between Richard Walsh and Jack Bauer.
Don't you ever say that.
Don't you ever say that. Let's get out of here. And then we get our first real extended like shootout action sequence of 24. It's Walsh and Jack versus two shooters. You should have factored in the third, guys. Mm-hmm. But it's a little bit of a shootout. It's kind of tense. The music's really cool. Shout out to Sean Cowery, who does the music for 24. Really, really, really fun stuff. After they kill the two guys, Jack kills one on his own, and then Walsh has to like alert Jack to the other guy. It's like, Jack! And then they both stand up and just like riddle the poor guy with 1,000 bullets.
But then Jack goes in to ID him.
Yeah. So Jack goes to ID one of the two
and
shooters.
I was just assuming he'd check for his wallet.
Or his pulse or something.
Yeah.
But then the music gets very sinister, and Jack takes out a rag, and he grabs the shooter by the wrist and grabs his finger and a knife and hacks off
his knife. Thumb.
He hacks off his knife clearly to fingerprint him, and Emily goes, why? You were scandalized.
Who takes a finger?
Jack Bauer takes a finger, and let me tell you.
I need this for later.
This is
this
not
is how I'm going to dial my future calls.
This is far from the last body part Jack is going to claim from somebody.
How's that guy ever going to open his iPhone?
He's dead. The dude's dead. The guy is not going to open his iPhone because A, iPhones don't exist yet at this point in the show.
And B, they're not fingerprinted anymore.
And he's dead. And that man is dead. So Jack takes that guy's finger. They're in a rush. He needs the fingerprint. The biker chick shows up at the Gaines compound, and Gaines like, okay, cool. So where's the ID card? She's like, well, here's a Polaroid of it. He's like, that's not good enough. That's not what we said. And even Mandy's like, yo, lady, that's not the deal. And she's like, trust me, I figured this whole thing out. It's going to work really well for us. That's sort of the cliffhanger of that storyline. It's like, where's the ID? She's got this big suitcase full of money. She's got summer plans. Is she going to be able to enjoy those summer plans, or is biker chick screwing everything up?
I think biker chick's screwing everything up.
It's pretty likely. 1:42, 46 in the morning. Alan and Terry are going to call Nina. Hey, Nina. So we can't reach Jack, and we need to pull our government strings.
This is literally like the most annoying thing ever.
We need to
I were Nina, I'd be like, sorry, wrong number.
need, new phone, who dis?
Yeah, exactly.
They need to call the owner of Palladio Furniture to
for no reason.
Well, they need to apologize.
If you know the name of the guy who works at Palladio, you use Nina to look up his address.
Yeah.
Not the owner of Palladio.
There's a guy named Dan who works at Palladio. Find out who that guy is and get us his information. That's the move.
Yeah.
So you're docking points from Terry Bauer in this episode.
And meanwhile, she's like Windexing the table they danced on. Yeah. Like, get out of here.
All right. So back at the Palmer suite, Keith and Nicole show up. Keith and Nicole Palmer, the
kids.
Fresh
off of a Green Day reference.
Yes. They were just like hanging out. They were like basking in the after party of Palmer's big speech the day before. And they're like, Green Day came out and played Time of Your Life. It was amazing. If we
every
have time,
graduation song of that era.
It was absolutely mine. It was maybe it wasn't. I think I sang on the chorus in high school for Time of Your Life as the graduation song for somebody else. We only have 4 minutes.
I'd like
minutes.
To
we
unpack
keep going.
That in another we time.
Alan and Terry are going to get the number from Nina. They're going to call the guy. Hey, Mr. Namaste, I'm so sorry.
What's his name?
It's like Mr. Namaste or something.
Namaste?
Mr. Naraste. Sorry, Mr. Naraste. We're so sorry. Tell us who Dan is. Back at the Palmer suite, Aaron Pierce, Secret Service, shows up. You don't know yet, Emily, but this dude's the man.
Oh.
He shows up and he's like, all right, David Palmer's left the suite. We've got high confidence there's going to be an attempt on his life today. And Palmer is escaping. He's ditching.
Yeah, you got to get into that Lincoln Navigator.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
Yeah, he's going to get into
it. He was in a dangerous garage for a second.
He was in a dangerous garage for a hot second. He had to get out of there fast. He almost got recognized. He has to like put his hand up as he's walking past two passersby. So that's what we get from Palmer. He wants to meet up with Maureen Kingsley. So we don't know exactly
Kingsley.
We don't know exactly what's going to happen with Maureen Kingsley yet, but that is in the works. Meanwhile, 1:53... Richard Walsh gets shot.
3 minutes left.
It's that third shooter. That third shooter shows up and kills Richard Walsh, but not before he gives his little key card to Jack. It's like, find the mole. Talk to Jamie. She
find
knows
the
what
right
to
hotel
do.
Room.
I know. And again,
I think I was in suite 14B.
And if he had just listened to Al Pacino, perhaps he would still be alive. But Kiefer takes the card. He like shoots at the other shooter. He doesn't get him, but he hops in the car and he like books it.
I've never seen a faster drive.
In the alternate universe in which 24 takes place, traffic does not exist in Los Angeles.
I know. I was going to ask about this,
there's
actually.
There's no traffic. There's no traffic.
Well, it's also late at night.
He calls Jamie. Yeah, but during the daytime, there's no traffic. He calls he calls Jamie, and Jamie's like, oh, well, you can get me the key card right now. You don't have to wait until you're back at CTU. There's the mobile scanner. Use the mobile scanner. Switch it from optical to magnetic. And so he like does some sort of 2001 technology
and
thing.
And he uncovers.
He finds out that the key card belongs to Nina. Nina
troubling.
Myers.
Do you think she's been framed, or do you think it's legitimately her?
Well, I know the answer. What's the answer?
I
to
bet you. I bet you she's framed.
Okay, so she.
Okay,
so
we gotta
she
talk about the
framed.
Most important part of this.
Okay,
Nina. Kim.
Kim calls Terry. Kim,
yes.
After like Dan and Rick pull over to the side of the road, they're like, call your mom.
And they
tell
like crowbar Janet in the arm or something.
They break Janet's arm.
That's so fucked up.
They crowbar Janet's arm. They break poor Rufy to Janet's arm to intimidate Kim into calling mom.
And Kim calls mom under extraordinary duress. And mom doesn't for a second say like, Kim, where are you? okay, I'm going to call the police.
No, she does call. She's like, where are you? I want to find you. I want to pick you up. And she's like, I don't even know how I got here. I'm so sorry. I love you, Mom. And then the thing that Terry latches onto is, she said, I love you. Oh my gosh, she never says that. That's so cute.
It's just ridiculous.
So we'll have to find out what's going to happen there. That's the cliffhanger we get. I guess the final scene of the episode is we see the fake Martin Belkin shooting a balloon from a distance. So it looks like if he gets within, he gets a clear shot of David Palmer, it's probably going to be bad. Emily, we are fast approaching 24 minutes. How would you grade episode 2 of season 1 of 24?
I would say A- again.
A- again. Oh my God, Emily is loving 24. This is fantastic. All right, we are loving Worst Day Ever. This is a terrific podcast. Emily Fox and I are just having an absolute blast. Hopefully you guys are enjoying this as well. Do you think people are liking this?
Rapid fire, baby.
Rapid fire, baby. One podcast, 24-minute podcast. We do these 4 days a week. First week is going to be 5 days a week. So we've got hour 3 to get to next. I don't know, I've got a little bit of time. All right, fine. I'll just wrap it up here. Subscribe to the podcast at Round Howard, at Emily on Twitter. We'll be back with another episode tomorrow. Take care, everybody. Bye.
And by tomorrow, I mean next week. This is me coming your way from 2021. It's weird, the time travel. It's almost done. Promise you, we'll be back next week. Another episode. Bye, everybody.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.